Well, next week in San Francisco, a trial is supposed to get underway to settle a dispute between Tesla shareholders and the company's CEO, Elon Musk. But in a court filing submitted late Friday, Musk is trying to move the trial to Texas. He relocated Tesla to Austin 2 years ago. But he also says he can't get a fair trial in San Francisco because there has been too much negative media coverage of his acquisition of Twitter. And that because he laid off so many Twitter employees, about 1,000 in the Bay Area alone, he says the jury pool is tainted. Loyola Law School professor and Press Play's legal eagle, Jessica Levinson, is here to talk about this. Hi.
Hi. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Okay, so is it plausible that every single person who is eligible to serve on a jury would have some connection to Twitter and or Elon Musk in the Bay Area?
Even if that is the case, I do not think that means that this trial needs to move. And we can talk about this, but no, it's not plausible that every single person would have such a direct connection that even during the process where we select a jury, they all say, you know what, I just can't follow the law. I'm sorry. Now, that's not necessarily the standard. It's not necessarily that high in terms of moving a trial, but I think, frankly, this reads a little bit like a last-ditch effort from Musk to either try and move or delay this trial.
So it's unlikely that he'll win that appeal to move it to Texas, is what you're saying.
So I think it's unlikely because this case has been litigated in Northern California for a number of years now. And when judges are looking at whether or not to transfer venue from one federal district to another, they're looking at things like where are the parties, where are the documents that might be at issue. And then they have this catch-all that they consider, which is what's in the interest of justice. And one of the things that judges look at is basically, are we already pretty far along in the process of the case? This is a judge who has already heard a lot of the arguments. Now, of course, it hasn't gone to trial yet, but it seems like it would cost a lot of resources, a lot of judicial resources, to then move this to another judge who has to get up to speed on the idea that simply because there's been coverage, you couldn't get a fair jury.
Mm. Okay, well, let's backtrack a little and talk about this case. What is it about this dispute between Musk and the shareholders of Tesla?
Yeah, so this is a shareholder lawsuit, and it's based on tweets that he sent back in August of 2018. And it should be noted that he's actually already been punished by the SEC for these tweets. But this is a separate legal action. This is, as we said, a private shareholder action. And the tweet at issue is one where he said, quote, am considering taking Tesla private at 420, funding secured. Now, that then led to a lot of volatility in Tesla stock prices, and the stock prices immediately rose in reaction to the tweet. Now, shareholders say that this was false, that no funding was secured, and that this was just Musk's way of trying to manipulate Tesla stock prices and to try and stop something called short sells and short sellers. And the judge in this case actually already found that Musk had not secured the funding, that in fact, the talks to try and secure the funding were very preliminary, and that these statements were false and misleading.
So what needs to be resolved then?
Yeah, so it sounds like, well, if the statements are false and misleading, then are we done? And the answer is that we're not done with respect to one of these securities fraud cases. So we still need to prove beyond a false or reckless statement a couple things. One, that he actually intended or had knowledge of wrongdoing. In the law, this is called scienter. Basically, that he didn't accidentally make this statement thinking that he was correct and not understanding the potential consequences here. Two, you have to show that there's a connection between that false state and the purchase or sale of stocks. You have to show that people relied on the false tweet. And finally, you have to show that people incurred economic losses as a result of, you need causation based on that false tweet. So yes, part of the decision has already been made by the judge, a factual finding here, but there's still a ways to go.
Right. And so does the Twitter acquisition have anything to do with this case at all? I mean, sure, he tweeted on Twitter, but that was before he owned the company. So will that come into play at all? Is it expected to come into play at all, the fact that he acquired Twitter and has been to say the least, quite confrontational about it.
So I don't think so, unless there's something with respect to what he has tweeted that might, well, actually, you know what? No, I really don't think so. I think, frankly, there is a separate lawsuit here from Twitter shareholders, and that deals with a completely different allegation. That deals with whether or not Musk failed to disclose when he owned more than the trigger amount, 5% of the company's stock, where he would need to disclose that publicly. But I don't think the fact that he acquired Twitter would really have any bearing on this completely separate action by Tesla shareholders, simply based on the fact that the statement at issue was made on Twitter.
And by the way, I think Twitter shareholders are also suing Musk, right, for a similar reason?
Exactly. The Twitter shareholders are saying there was a certain period of time where you owned that trigger amount of the company. You own 5% of the company. You needed to tell us that. The law requires public disclosure. Instead of disclosing, you just kept buying and buying and buying. And that harmed other people who were unaware, and that it actually hurt less wealthy investors. So that is a parallel or separate lawsuit, but easily confused with, but not the same as this other lawsuit dealing with the Tesla shareholders.
Right. And then separately, there have been complaints that Tesla's stock has been driven down because Elon Musk has been so consumed with Twitter and hasn't really kept his eye on the ball of Tesla. I'm not sure if these allegations are being folded into this original shareholder lawsuit, but could that be actionable?
So two separate questions, of course. I don't think it's going to be folded in. Could it be actionable? What that really would give rise to is potentially a breach of a fiduciary duty claim.
Right.
And I'm not sure, just based on the fact that he's spending more time with another company, does that really rise to the level of breach of fiduciary duty? We tend to allow our executives to own more than one company and to divide their time as they see fit. Now, whether or not, again, his actions truly give rise to not just maybe even negligence, but a breach of that duty, I think we'd need a lot more information.
Okay. I want to turn to another topic entirely and talk about a federal court ruling from last week. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, a largely conservative body, struck down a Trump-era ban on bump stocks. And bump stocks are a way to modify a weapon to simulate automatic fire. And a big part of why that attack in Las Vegas back in 2017 was so deadly. 60 people were killed. It is, I believe, the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. And so the Fifth Circuit struck down that ban on bump stocks, but not on Second Amendment grounds. What was their reasoning?
Not on Second Amendment grounds. This is actually a fairly complicated ruling. It's 13-3, and the judges in the majority didn't really agree on a rationale other than it dealt with interpretation of a federal law and whether or not bump stocks actually are covered under machine guns, whether or not that word machine guns that's in the federal criminal law, if it includes bump stocks. And the reason that the ruling is strange here is that about 8 of the judges said the federal law here is unambiguous and bump stocks are just not covered by the language of the federal laws that define illegal machine guns. Then there were 5 other judges in this case, and they said this criminal statute is ambiguous. And so under this doctrine that we use to interpret criminal laws, it should be interpreted against the government and in favor of defendants. Now, the last thing kind of lurking within this decision, which again is more complicated than it first looks, is the idea that if Congress wants to include bump stocks, that's up to Congress. It's not up to the ATF. And the ATF was a federal agency that during the Trump administration changed their rule to say machine guns includes bump stocks. What the court said here is basically, okay, Congress gets to do that, not the ATF.
Oh, okay. It does sound confusing, but where does that leave us? Are they now banned or not banned?
So at this point, it goes back to the lower federal court. Uh-huh. Other courts have said we're upholding the ban. So I think this is just destined for the Supreme Court because there's a circuit split at this point. Other circuits have said we're okay with the ban. Now the Fifth Circuit is saying we're not. That's the quintessential example of when the Supreme Court has to step in and say, okay, here's the answer.
All right. our legal eagle, Jessica Levinson. She teaches law at Loyola Law School. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
How January 6th influenced January 8th in Brazil. Hundreds of people are arrested there after yesterday's violence. But what does this say about the future of Brazil's democracy? That's next on Press Play.